and welcome to the Midnight Choir, the Rover Media's podcast where we inform you about incredibly important news, such as the Alberta Premier has decided to ban many wind turbines because she doesn't like how they look in the open prairies.
It's important to preserve the scenic. Like, there's only a certain amount of prairies, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like they go on forever. I'm glad someone's finally standing up for prairies.
Gotta stand up for Big Field.
I like that. Yeah.
What else are we talking about today, Chris?
The alarming findings inside a mass shooter's brain. Just stop giving people guns. Like, why are we doing these super elaborate studies about, you know, what if science could intercept, or like, what if the a strand of fiber in someone's DNA could, like, why are we...
Are people genetically predisposed to be murderers?
Just stop giving people guns. Like, this is the... You're the only country where this happens all the time.
That's the Onion article every single time.
Anyways, I saw that in the Times, and it's like, guys, can we stop pretending that it's any other reason than, like, there are gazillions of guns that you could basically get in a vending machine?
And now, the other great article from New York Times this week was, billionaires have potentially solved the housing crisis. And you want to know how they're doing it? They have decided, this one guy, he created a firm, because you got to make a separate company from yourself in order to avoid taxes.
Yeah, of course.
And he's bought up massive amounts of land in the Bay Area and has been constructing housing there for people who want to live in his city. So it's going to be a new city that only this billionaire owns.
Okay.
That you can live in, and that will solve the housing crisis.
What do you have to do, though?
Like, I don't know. What does he
get out of this?
I mean, he probably gets a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm getting like government subsidies, but is he also like maybe cloning you? Oh, you know what? I originally thought this was
genes.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought this was like that Michael Bay movie where they clone people, and the clones are just like, they exist so that the original
the island with Ewan McGregor.
Exactly,
dude. That movie's sick.
It's a very handsome movie. Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson.
And it's horrifying. It's straight up horrifying. It's a scary ass movie. All right, so on to real things that we want to talk about. First, I wanted to say thank you for listening to us. This is Chris's pride and passion, that the Rover Media is an exemplary group. I'm not actually technically part of it. I'm just a friend. So I'm allowed to boost it as much as I want because I'm not biased, because I'm not working for you. So
you haven't been paid.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, without God. Payment, I have no bias.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So thank you so much for listening. If you want to help us out, and we desperately need your help, okay? We're poor. we're super broke. Leftism does not pay. I'm going to tell you that right now. Please go rate this on iTunes, on Spotify as well. The more you rate it, the more visibility we have. And the second thing is, please share this with your friends. If you have people who would be interested in this, please share this. The media network, the Rover Media Network, is a very independent group. It's completely funded by readers. And
a lot of our ideas come from readers, and a lot of our contributors are former readers.
So we please ask that you share it with people who might be interested in this. We know that this could benefit people, and we want this to grow. So thank you so much. For now, I would love to hear what you're writing this week, you're releasing this week, Chris, the piece.
So today we published on our website, part of our mission is to promote French language writing and to expose more Anglophones to Francophone culture. And so in French today, we published a 3,500 word piece on women in fighting. And these are women who fight.
Boxing or MMA or what?
Kickboxing.
Okay.
And Muay Thai. And these are women who, like, they fight in the ring, but like they fought to just be accepted in their sport. A lot of them are activists. They're super kind people in a world that's like, it's not always easy to navigate as a woman. It's by my good friend and collaborator, Katia Briand. She spoke to...
her last name is Briand.
Briand, yeah. She.
That's amazing.
Katia M. Briand. She spoke to... she spoke to some trans fighters. She spoke to Morgane, Morgane Pouliot. Her name's Tiny Tank. I've seen her fight. Tiny Tank is a monster in the ring. But out of the ring, super kind.
That's
comes from a
so
family
funny.
Of women who like have always fought for the poor, for people who are vulnerable. So like it's a real heartwarming piece, and it's a really good exploration of like,
right,
what does it mean to be a woman, and what does it mean to be maybe queer in a space where it's not always super safe to be queer,
right?
And how are they changing the culture? And I absolutely love it. You know, if you know me and you, well, we know each other. So, but if anybody else does, like, you know, I'm obsessed with kickboxing, and that's how Katia and I became friends, and this is one of the proudest, like, this is the proudest I've been of us in a while. Like, I love this piece.
So cool, dude.
I love the sort of community building that Katsia did to make it happen. And I'm just so fucking proud of her, dude, you know? And so it's in French today. It's in both languages on the newsletter today. And then, and today it will also be published in English a little later. So, that's something I'm super excited about. And it's an example of, like, this doesn't happen if we don't get people supporting and paying for the Rover.
And how can they sign up for this?
Yeah. So you go to therover.ca/support-us, or just go to therover.ca, sign up for the free emails. You don't have to pay for shit yet. Just see if you like it. And if you really like it, and if you want to support it, and if you want more of these kinds of pieces where, like, look, Katsia has worked on this piece for 6-7 months. We spent $700 on film and development alone, because all the pictures for the story are in 35 millimeter black and white film. So we put in a ton of work. It's real expensive, but you know, when you're a subscriber, say, and you give me $100, like, that $100 is going right to Katsia. Like, obviously we have partners that take a 10% cut. That's fine. We have to pay sales tax, but almost all of the money you give goes directly to that journalist. So you're helping people make stuff that, it's like, I was thinking about this last night, and I'm, like, so touched by it. Like, that people actually bother to read and share and support, and they help us write these stories that bring people together. And that shit is, like, that's what's missing in the media right now is community. And I love being a part of this community. And so if you're a part of it, great. If you're not a part of it, please consider joining. If you don't want to join, you know, lots of love anyways, man.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, please support us. And guys, we're going to get right into the topic now. We want to talk about the student protests that happened yesterday in protest of the student price hike for people who are out of province or international. And we're going to talk about that in depth. Yesterday, there were 20,000 who had a manifestation about the tuition price hike from $8,992 a year to $12,000. And it is specifically for Anglophone schools. So French schools will not be facing this problem. I actually don't know if you're out of province and you go to a Francophone school, do you still get the price hike?
You don't get the price hike. They're so, like,
it's only out for of province, Anglophone schools. It's McGill, yeah, Bishop, and Concordia.
Then. Not Bishop. Bishop's been excluded because
they're out of Montreal.
Because these tuition hikes would hurt them real bad.
Okay.
And like, to where it would threaten their academic mission.
Because they're...
It's hurting McGill and Concordia, but they have enough money on hand and, like, that they can handle it for a bit. But Bishop's, I don't think, could weather this storm for very long.
They're the smallest of the three by a significant amount. Yeah, they're a tiny university.
Yeah.
So... what brought about this decision, Chris? Like, is this politically motivated or is it financially motivated?
I was at the protest. I was speaking to Anna Scheftel, who's a prof in the Concordia. She's the principal of the Concordia School of Community and Public Affairs. And she calls it, it's austerity, right? It's a cutback. It's trying to claw back more money for the Quebec government, you know, by raising tuition on international and out of province students at Anglophone universities. The government says they can raise an extra $110 million doing this. Of course, this calculation was before they announced that the decision wouldn't be affecting Bishop's. And that calculation also, originally they wanted to charge out of province students even more, so they've reduced it. So they said they were going to raise $110 million. It's probably going to be significantly less, but they're going to raise money and they're going to transfer all of the money from Anglophone schools to Francophone universities. You know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. And so this prof, who was, you know, Anna Scheftel, was saying it's a way of making this austerity, like robbing, basically robbing the poor. It's a way of making it palatable by saying, well, we're not robbing the poor. It's these Anglophones who, you know, need to know their place. It's sort of like an attack on Anglophone institutions to make it seem less like just a naked cash grab or, you know, bad governance. So I don't know exactly. I'm sure there are people in the government that believe this and that really think this will help. But I'm sure that there are more people in the government that know it won't and know it's just bullshit politics.
Explain to me how the finances work with schools, because are they not private institutions? Are they owned by the government?
Well, they're all overseen and funded by the government, right? So, like, Quebec government gives, I think it's a $3,000 per student subsidy for all these universities. which they also get for, you know, for certain kinds of international students. And so with all of us, you know, Concordia collects a certain amount of money, and the government subsidizes the vast majority of that, like of our presence in school. Concordia keeps a little bit. I believe right now, if you were to go to Concordia for the year, it's like $6,000 if you're from Quebec. What happens with out-of-province students and what happens with international students is they also get that subsidy, but the province gets to keep everything that's over, you know. So if you're an international student, you're paying under this new, you know, under this new law, you're paying, or new policy, you're paying $22,000 a year to go to Concordia. The government keeps a lot more of it. To simplify it, you know, you're charging more money, a significant amount more money, so you're collecting more money. But that's under the assumption that, like, the exact number of people are going to keep enrolling and that these tuition hikes won't scare people away. The thing is, they already are scaring people away because we're seeing pretty significant drops in applications at McGill University and Concordia.
Do you have any statistics on the amount?
I do.
How much are applications dropping by? Do you have stats on that?
All right. So the latest statistics at Concordia this year compared to last year. Applicants from the rest of Canada down by 23%, 23%, okay. Mm-hmm. International undergrad applications, down by 12%. I didn't get the grad stats yet, but the grad stats will be even higher percentages because a lot higher percentage of international students are in graduate school versus undergrads. So, and then finally, like last year, the government collected $37.2 million from international and rest of Canada students in Concordia. So maybe they'll collect more this year. Maybe it'll be the same amount because of all this drop off. I'm not sure. When you say applications are down 23%, that doesn't mean enrollment's down 23%. It actually could be a lot worse because let's say you apply and then you think, okay, well, I'll think of the financial considerations later. You know, I'll apply first. And if I can afford it, I can afford it. And if not, I can't. So you get your acceptance. And you think, you know what, I can't, or I got accepted somewhere else or whatever. So we might see a drop as high as 40 or 50% of...
It's a huge amount.
It's a huge... And at Concordia, you know, you have the engineering and computer science students. Something like in the master's program, like half of those students are international students. And this right. is a degree that creates a kind of specialized worker that is overwhelmingly in demand in Quebec. And I was speaking with, you know, the president of the ECGSA, that's the student association yesterday. Yeah. His name's Siva Kumar Darapu. And yeah, he was telling me that like, he's taking French lessons. He loves it here. He loves the culture. He wants to respect the culture. He wants to be a part of the culture. But, and he has a job and like, but it's getting so intense that he just doesn't want the trouble. So he's going to move to Ottawa. So Ottawa gains an extremely skilled worker, someone who's so involved in his community that he's the president of his student association. Like, if I'm an employer in Quebec, I want someone like that. I want someone like that working with me. What's happening, I think, or what's going to happen is we're going to lose a lot of this talent. And it's not that there aren't Quebecers that aren't, you know, good enough to do this. It's that the demand is so big right now everywhere for skilled labor, and we're just not meeting it with the people we have here.
Can you please give us... Like, the thing that a lot of people might not have context for, if you moved here in the past 10 years, I was over in Gatineau area, so it's like I remember all this, but in 2011, 2012, there was student protests. So can we actually talk a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about like how significant it is for Montrealers and Quebecers to protest the government trying to price hike, and then we'll dive more into this, because it's important to have the context of 2011, 2012.
2011 and 2012 are the first years where I made money as a journalist that right. where I could pay rent. And the only reason is because of the student strikes. There were, so the government, the Charest Liberal government at the time, essentially over a 3 or 4 year period, it might've even been shorter. We're going to almost double. I think it was increased by 80% tuition for Quebecers, for everybody.
It was going to raise it to the rest of Canada, basically.
Yeah, basically. And the idea was, which is true, universities are pretty underfunded. You know, they have to go to the charitable and private sector a lot and industrial sector a lot to get funding for research and stuff. But so he imposes these huge price increases, and sparks the biggest mass mobilization against the government that outside of the recent public sector strikes, I don't think, definitely the biggest student opposition to the government in Canadian history, maybe North American history. There were like one day there was like almost a quarter of a million people marching through the streets of Montreal to
protest. Because it wasn't just students, it was families of students, and like it was vastly beyond.
But the weird thing is, it wasn't like people forget this, but like people were not in favor of these protests. And people like
really a good
50 to 60%. Oh, they were very controversial.
For real.
Because they were very disruptive.
Right. The protests.
That's should the be. Whole idea of a protest, right?
They if were a disruptive. Protest is not disruptive, it is ineffectual.
And you're right, right? You know, it's like if only Martin Luther King would have been more reasonable.
That's
know?
It. Like, that's what conservative moderate usually say, but it's
You know, they're like, don't be violent, but also don't be nonviolent. Just don't be.
So with the context of the Quebec protests against the student tuition hike in 2011-2012, what does the government say in reaction to this, the committees that are like looking at this law that is being passed in the tuition hike?
Do you seem to recall that there was actually there was support for an increase? Maybe not the exact increase the government wanted, but there was like institutional support for an increase because there was such a bad funding problem in the universities. And like the whole point of Quebec making tuition as low as it is that it's a value that we have, right? Is that it's not so much about how much money you make. It's about the kind of life you can live and you know, doing something that can either give back to society or participating in higher learning, not as a way to get a good job, but as a way to advance the intellectual mission of this province. And the Liberal government, the PQ government, the CAC government, they all know since then that like, it's just bad business. Like the universities need more money. It's and they're going to try and claw that back wherever they can. So until now there's been a sort of quiet peace on that front, but the CAC broke the peace and they chose, I think, a very smart target, which is Anglophones, who gives a shit, and international students. And yeah, in Montreal, this is a big issue, but off island, not so, like, people don't care so much. It's not something they see every day, so it's not as much of a priority. So, like, yeah, these are two populations this government can afford to upset. So the government in Quebec cannot change tuition without consulting. The committee is called Comité Consultatif sur l'accessibilité financière aux études. This committee gives the government recommendations. They're not binding. They don't have to list. They don't have to apply them, but they do have to listen to them. So this committee issued a report calling the tuition hikes. Here's what they had to say. Although the need to finance education is indisputable, it is imperative to find solutions that do not negatively affect accessibility, diversity, and attractiveness of Quebec educational institutions. The committee strongly encourages the government to reconsider this decision and explore alternatives that guarantee a balance between the need to finance education and the maintenance of fundamental principles of accessibility and inclusion. This is in a letter that the committee wrote to the government that was obtained by Montreal Gazette journalist Andy Riga. Thank you, Andy. He's a bad motherfucker. Andy's a real good reporter.
Really cool.
Real good guy. Anyways, this is so the committee's against it, but the government rejects the committee's recommendations because the report was handed in 4 days late.
In case you're looking to check anything that we're saying, all of the sources are in the podcast description. So please feel free to go check all these sources. They're going to be in there, okay? That's crazy that they just rejected it outright because of 4 days late.
I mean, that's the reason they give, but they rejected it.
It's not reality, right? I looked at every single journal in Quebec about this. I tried to look up information about this. Not a single one except the Gazette and CTV.
And like CBC Montreal.
CBC didn't make a post about it.
Oh no.
CBC did not talk about the protest yesterday. Wow. So the fact that not a single journal,
might have been on the radio.
Maybe not including the CBC, did not even speak about the 20,000 protest. Does that indicate that there's no efficacy to what they're saying?
I think the reason, like, again, this is just like kudos to François Legault for playing real good politics. He chose a group of people that don't generate a ton of sympathy in the other press. And the legislation, in the same way that I think Bill 96 was, there was a lot of griping from the Anglophone community over Bill 96. and a lot of Francophones hadn't quite maybe explored the entirety of the bill and didn't see some of the like little problematic things. They just assumed we were being big crybabies. The media thing about this tuition increase is that we like there is a ton of misunderstanding on that side. I was talking to someone who follows the news very closely, and you know, she's an engineer. She went to school in French, and she assumed that the law only affected out of province students. I think she said something like, well, you know, they come here and then they leave, and you know, maybe we should prioritize international students. And I said, well, you know, no, well, they're doubling the tuition for international students. And she said, oh, I didn't know that. Like, so a lot of basic information isn't making its way to the other
side.
Why isn't
that? Why are journals not covering it? Like, you'd think that this
it's
would
not
be
a
important.
Sexy story. It's like it's kind of a boring story. I think there might be some bias that, like, you know what, we don't particularly care if the Anglophones cry and whine about this. I know, actually, you know what? No, there has been. I say all this, but there have been some excellent columns. I was thinking chronique, the French word. There's some excellent columns in La Presse about, like, okay, one of them was like, the hunt for the Anglophone hunting season must be open, or it's like open season on Anglophones.
They gave a shit a couple months ago when the tuition was happening, the hike was happening. Yeah. But the fact that there's
but they won't
now,
follow the minutia. They won't follow them. It's not maybe so much for their audience. I think it's too bad because it's a pretty tangible example of this government doing something against the recommendation of experts that will probably harm our local economy, and that will create a bunch of havoc and deteriorate the quality of education at an English university. Like, this is important. This is a huge attack on two very important English institutions that have produced some of the best academics and some of the best minds to come out of this province.
Is McGill not the number one research university in Quebec?
I think it is, but you know, I mean, there's a lot of international money that gets poured into McGill. I think McGill has a lot of prestige in the rest of Canada, the rest of North America. You know, maybe not all that money is deserved, but you know, McGill brings in a ton of research money to Quebec and runs two of the best hospitals. Yeah, Stéphanie Gramont in La Presse pointed out a really significant disparity in the way that this law is presented and what it actually does, or the efficacy of it. So one of the modifications the CAC has made to how we integrate immigrants is that the government has made it easier if you apply to certain programs, if you're an international student, they've made it easier for you to make your way into the sort of, as a permanent resident. And that's great, but only for Francophone universities. And, even if your first language is French and you go to McGill and you want to stay in Quebec, you don't get the shortcut. Even if you can speak French fluently and pass all of the French exams, you don't get the shortcut if you went to an Anglophone university.
To an Anglophone university.
So it's kind of a shakedown. It feels like a shakedown, which is why the Concordia and McGill are suing the government to stop this from happening.
Carrying on from there, okay, but what you're saying is not completely true, because a lot of international students are not getting a price increase.
You're right.
And specifically, it would be the French, the Belgians, they have none.
Yeah.
And a certain portion of 56 countries.
So small selection. The French and Belgians, what tuition do they pay here?
They pay the out-of-province Quebec rate.
Okay.
So not, but the previous one.
Yeah, they won't get the 12 grand.
They won't get the 12 grand. They'll have $8,992.
Cool.
Okay, that's the exact price that they'll pay every year. And French and Belgians, as well as 56 other countries, which have a selection and a limit. So there's a quota that they can reach. And the government has an agreement with these 56 countries, and they're not all French speaking. And in these 56 countries, the local government, so let's say Morocco, chooses who gets to go with that tuition.
How many people in Morocco?
I think so. I actually have exact stats on this for a few countries, and I got this from the CBC. Okay. So French and Belgian, they all keep that tuition. Okay. There's 90 Moroccans, 83 Algerians. I believe this is for either this year or next year. It should be next year, I think, because the article was talking about the price increase. So 90 Moroccans, 83 Algerians, 65 Tunisians, 52 Senegal, 50 Mexicans, and a bunch of others. But those are the kind of the largest groups that are going to be coming. So the fact that there's Mexicans, there's Chinese who get to come for that. I think it's 150.
It's the highest of any other group.
So 150 Chinese who get to come for $8,992. Yeah. So, which indicates to me that the price hike has nothing to do with language, which is, I think, something we need to talk about. Because if it doesn't have anything to do with language, is this about separatism?
I think it's as always, it's about Quebec having more control over what happens within its own borders. I think it doesn't hurt that it's picking a fight with the rest of Canada. We've seen, because of a lot of these fights over Bill 21, over and because the Trudeau government's super unpopular right now, and a series of small and large disagreements over federalism, you're seeing the percentage of Quebecers who would support like a sovereign Quebec. I think it cracked 40% and up for the first time
since the 90s.
Since the PQ was,
so 2008.
Yeah, like around that kind of time when the PQ would have been in the conversation. No, actually the 2007, 2008 was not very good year. So like 2012, maybe it was around there. Like it's coming back to the point where like, okay, well maybe we can start having this conversation again. But, you know, 40% does not a country make, you know, it's still just 40%. But these are exacerbated 51%?
I'm not sure 51% can make the country.
I mean, that's another conversation. Right?
you would need 80% plus, I think, to make Quebec its own state.
Can you get 80% of people to agree on anything?
No, yeah, so, but making an entire country, you'd need at least that much to make
like
it stable.
A fucking meta conversation about like.
But that's what this schooling thing is.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Well, it points to this meta conversation, doesn't it?
It does, in the sense that, I mean, it's going to come down to, over this lawsuit, once again, it's going to come down to the Charter of Rights and Quebec pushing as hard as it can to get away with violating the Charter of Rights, or to get as close as a violation as they can without quite crossing the line. Yeah, I mean, it's our position within Confederacy has often been twist Ottawa's arm until they give us what we want. We have a lot of leverage. And I think that we see the future of Canada, you know, a country that's going to grow very quickly over the next 50 years. And a lot of Francophone Quebecers maybe see their demographic weight shrinking within that Canada. And I mean, this I don't think is exactly that, but you're seeing politics that address that fear and politics that address that the sort of anxiety of like, where do we belong in all of this? There's a lot of money and a lot of gain to be made on those kinds of politics, unfortunately. And right now, yeah, that's what that is. It's those politics, right? It's the other. It's, you know, don't like 66% of Quebecers disapprove of how this government handles education. So like, don't focus on that. It's the Anglophones. It's the immigrants. It's the people who take advantage of us and don't learn your language. When in reality, 94% of Quebecers can carry a conversation in French. I don't think you could say that about 94% of Americans in English. 94% of Quebecers compared
That's
to
absurd.
20, 30,
That's
40
absurd.
Years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a good thing. But because not enough Quebecers speak French as a language at home, this government sees that as a giant failure. But like, if you come from abroad, you want to keep some elements of your culture. You know, you're going to maybe still speak Arabic at home, or you're maybe going to, if you come from England and you speak French, as I have a few friends that do, you know, out in the common area, they speak French, they've learned French, they write French, they think in French, but then at home they speak to their kids in English, because that's just like, that's us. Like that's me and my kid. I speak to her in English here, but out there everything's French. And
yeah,
that's
but she
how it
speaks
be.
Both languages simultaneously.
Yeah, that's right.
Every sentence that Wednesday says is literally 50% English, 50% French. Yeah. Adorable. Okay, I want to push back against you a little, just because I don't like straw man arguments, and I feel like if you set up too much from one perspective, you get a straw man argument. So one of the biggest arguments for this, and I think it's a pretty valid argument personally, and you don't have to agree, but so I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah,
is one of the biggest reasons for housing increase in prices is literally international students and out of province people coming here because of the cheaper housing.
Well,
and then you have people willing, like a lot of my friends who are French and or Canadian who are from out of province, mm-hmm. are willing to pay absurd amounts of money for a terrible place in a way that people wouldn't be willing to if they were Quebecers.
Well, yeah, you know, I think, it's a bit of an easy scapegoat. People will say that sometimes without acknowledging that a pretty good percentage of those students stay on university, like in student housing. So we tend to forget that. And we also tend to forget that the housing crisis is very much manufactured by people who flip houses, by landlords who have been rent evicting people, by an out of control real estate market that's forcing, you know, over leveraged property owners to come up with ways of getting rid of tenants who aren't paying enough rent, doing slight modifications to the apartment, jacking rent. Like, there's a whole system in place that is driving these rental increases to where I don't know that 10, 20,000 students ultimately is what makes the difference, especially if you consider that a good chunk of them are already in student housing. So look, it could be a part of the symptom of the problem, but I don't think the students are the problem.
Okay. The other thought that kind of like struck me as I saw all this is the Anglophone, and I think it's less international, it's specifically Anglophones from the rest of Canada,
yeah,
being very unwilling to learn French.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest with you, as somebody who speaks French fairly well, and you do too, get over yourselves. Like, that's what it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, I worked hard to learn it. And so, like, I understand when people are like, well, okay, do your French classes. Like, shut up.
Yeah, well, two things can be true. It can be true, and I believe that there are people in the rest of Canada who resent Quebec in a way that is, like, irrational.
Like Albertans.
Oh, man. I was in Saskatchewan once, and we were riding around with, the mayor of this small city, and at the time there was a rumor that, like, if Justin Trudeau didn't do well in the federal election, I was following Justin Trudeau, a very important reporter. This is before he was the prime minister. When he was running for office, there was a sort of rumor going around that if he didn't do well, he would be replaced and as leader. And one of the names being kicked around was Denis Coderre, the mayor of Montreal at the time. And I remember kind of like, you know, wanting to seem cool, like I'm an insider, kind of sharing this with the mayor. And the mayor's like, that shit would never fly out here. We would not vote for a Francophone. Like, we're not going to, the way he said it was like, we're not going to vote for another French prime minister. And it's like, first of all, French, like, that's a very, like, yes, I know the language they speak is French, but they're Quebecers. I mean,
yeah, Canadians. Say that to a Quebecer.
You might, no, there's an irrational, like, I've almost gotten into a fight with a member of a certain criminal organization because he said some shit about my mom, who is French, specifically about her being French. Like, I've seen that resentment, and I've seen that, like, but I think that's our parents, and I think that's our parents' parents. There are people like that are our age, but there are fewer and fewer people like that are our age because we don't necessarily have those cultural battles in our DNA. We don't care so much about this. We have other interests. Young sovereignists aren't as obsessed with, like, all this identitarian stuff that the older sovereignists are. So, there's a laziness, but I don't think that it has to do with, like, I don't think this solves that. I don't think this addresses that. I think this is more anecdotal than anything else. And, like, McGill and Concordia made an offer, a counter proposal to the government, where they went back to the government and said, okay, forget about the hikes. What if we include compulsory French course for Canadian students who are not Quebec residents, offer more immersive internships in the regions, so then the regions get specialized workers and the students get to be immersed in French, because if you're in Montreal, everybody can speak English. You're not going to learn. So they also offered to organize more cultural activities and develop programs with businesses and cultural organization to solidify ties between Francophones in Quebec and international and out-of-province students. So something very concrete was put on the table, and it was rejected. I get this image of the Anglophone who is stubborn and refuses, and I share that frustration because those people exist. But I think that we're assuming everyone is like that, and we're not giving people a chance to come here and learn and fall in love with the culture. That is how some of Canada's greatest bands were founded. People come to study here, they stay here. That is how, you know, that is how we've had a lot of great intellectuals, you know, encrust themselves into our cities, is because they came here as students. And to me, you're taking something very special about Montreal, its universities. Like, what other major city in North America has, I think, 5 universities? Not very many. I think outside of Boston, we are, and maybe the Bay Area.
We're one of the biggest.
We're one of the biggest university for hubs sure. In Canada, in North America, and perhaps even the world. As much as people like to complain about lazy arts students, like, when you go home tonight after work, like, what are you going to do? You're going to listen to music on your way home, and you're going to fucking hopefully listen to this podcast, but you're going to listen to music, you're going to watch TV. These are arts degree people that make art and that create shit that you love, and that's what makes Montreal special, and beyond all of this kind of dry talk about the economy and skilled workers and whatever, I think there's a deeper argument about just the pettiness of this move and the sort of the hostility towards diversity. My angle here is that you have something that's working. You have, like, it's not perfect. And the people at Concordia and McGill have, I think, put together a decent counter proposal. That's not perfect either, but you have something good that works, that produces thousands of skilled workers every year, and just, you know, to say nothing of all the cultural and economic benefits of having all these students in our city. Don't monkey around with that, you know. Like, it's maybe, like, they are a pretty significant part of Montreal's economy as well, and when you start to monkey around with that, like, you're creating, you will create a series of unintended consequences you probably, you know, none of us can think of. I think we have a tradition of being academically minded since the Quiet Revolution. We want to be a hub for learning in North America and the world. And this hurts that a great deal. And it makes us look regional and petty. And I don't think it's in keeping with the spirit of what this province is and who we are as a people. Because I think we can be a very welcoming and kind people if we choose to follow the good path.
Right. No, that's a really good argument. Like, it's kind of a fallacy to say, well, other places have it worse, so why does it matter if we do? It's like, well, no, why would we want to get worse?
Yeah, well, it's like a fallacy, during the Bill 21 argument, where it's like, well, you know, if you don't like it, why don't you go to Iran? Like, why are we comparing ourselves to to a theocracy?
In the States, like, as debt forgiveness is becoming a conversation, people who are like, well, I had to pay back my debt. But it's like, but don't you want your kids to do better?
No. I want everybody to be as fucking miserable as I am.
Right. So it's like, it's not really my argument that, well, the other provinces pay more, is kind of an invalid argument just based on the fact that, don't we want the province to continue to do better?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I really see your point. I think you have a strong argument against that. Like, why give up something that was good in the first place?
I don't know, man. Politics. This stuff, it feels like it's written on the corner of a bar napkin, because it always comes out when they're doing shitty in the polls. It always comes out when they, you know, there's always like a new identity issue to throw at them. The budget came out yesterday.
$11 billion.
And you know, significant cuts in elder care, cuts in education, cuts in all these places we can't afford to cut. Like, there's no meat left. It's only bone. So, yeah, it's a way for them to change the subject, I think. And they're very good at that. But, you know, eventually you do have to govern. And, you know, I think this is the mandate of the CAC learning, that eventually you have to govern, and a lot of its supporters learning that, you know, just being angry is not governing, and just feeling aggrieved, though often valid, is not, you know, it's not a political philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
you're right.
Sometimes I am.
Anything else to say, my friend?
Well, I was going to pump up one thing we're doing at the Rover. And by the way, thank you for supporting us. Thanks for listening. If you're still listening, Jesus, that you are very patient with this voice. Okay. I'm fighting on Saturday for a charity event where we raise money for one of the only explicitly LGBTQ friendly boxing gyms in the city. It's called Barbu Kickboxing. We are going to be, there's 16 of us fighting. It's friendly. It's not like a super, it's sparring. So no one's going to take anyone's head off. But, if you're interested in combat sports at all, if you want to meet, I think you might be there, Isaac. So if you want to meet us, by all means, come. I'd love to have a chat with you. If you want to be a part of a community of people who support each other and have a good time. And like a lot of the people that you'll read about in the story in the Rover, if you read it, today and tomorrow, A lot of those people are going to be at the gym, and they're like a second family to me. And I would be so honored if you guys came. It's on Rue de Relais near the intersection of Jarry and Saint-Denis. We'll leave the address in the episode description. And if you guys want to join us, you know, I'll buy you guys popcorn because they're selling popcorn on Saturday, and I love popcorn, and so should you.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. Please rate this on iTunes. Please rate this on your podcast app. Please like this on YouTube. Share this with your friends, and go sign up for the free newsletter. We really want to start spreading the word further. We would love people to have more information. We're trying to be very well sourced. We're trying to be like an accurate data bank. Chris alone is an excellent source because he's a 15-year vet of journalism. I am not an accurate source, so I am sourcing many other people. I am simply a producer. So please,
just a producer, middle person.
So please like, subscribe, share, five stars. We beg you.
I think that's how we get momentum. That's how we get momentum.
We're trying to build up momentum. Yeah.
And send your questions to
info@therover.ca.
info@therover.ca, or hit me up however you know how to hit me up. Find Isaac on Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram is the one. IXCWYLDE. It's a very strange way of spelling it. That's what you get for being non-binary.
I love your Instagram. It makes me laugh all the time. And I love you, Isaac.
I love you, man.
I love all you guys for listening.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. Have a good night.